Hey, Kurt, good afternoon. Welcome back to You, Me, and IBMI. How you been doing?
Well, great, Alex. I came in today. There's not a lot of people that come into the office on Fridays. As you know, most of the people try to come in at least 3 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Friday could be a little light, but got in and instantly got busy with having to collaborate with another team on an IFS issue.
How'd that turn out?
Well, this customer had restored their system and it was missing a lot of IFS objects because they had a bad save tape. So he wanted to know how to analyze his IFS to be able to tell what he was missing that another kind of a duplicate system had. So the first thing I did today was I had to dive right into run SQL scripts, which is just an amazing part of Access Client Solutions, but one that I don't get to touch enough. So I definitely need to be using that and learning how to do that more. So yeah, I got into that. And then I was reading up a little bit on our guest today.
Oh, okay. But hey, about that, the save restore and comparing IFS directories, I wonder if there's space in the podcast schedule to slip something like that in after you figure out what the best way is to do that.
Well, so I work in Save Restore, and a lot of my customers seem to not be as familiar with run SQL scripts as I think they should be, because it is so powerful. And of course, downstairs, the developers have an IC blog that's really focused on SQL and what you can do in run SQL scripts. And yeah, I think that that's an area where I definitely need to learn more, and that we should probably have more education. And yeah, we could do a whole series about run SQL scripts and what you can do in there. How are you doing today? You said it was a little cold on your ride in today?
Oh yeah. But it's about 32 degrees Fahrenheit. Today was actually the first day that I had my pogies or my gauntlets on my bike. So, you gotta have those, or your fingers are freezing by the time I get to work. But it was fine. It's a good ride.
Yeah, so now how long have you been riding a bike to work most days?
Oh, most days, I would say only 5 or 6 years, maybe.
Oh, okay. Well, that's still pretty good, man, for Rochester.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I just feel like I have a lot more energy after riding in or riding home for that matter.
Yeah, man. Well, hey, this is, of course, our first real episode of the podcast. And I'll be honest, I'm a little, I have kind of some butterflies about it, because I think with video and audio stuff, I kind of tend to be a perfectionist. And I think that I was probably overthinking it for a few weeks about how we should be recording this. We don't have a team that is helping us put this together, or even a big fancy place to do it. So, yeah, I think this has kind of been a learning experience about how to get one of these things started.
It's a guerrilla operation.
Do you listen to any podcasts, Alex?
I don't, to be honest. I'm a text guy. I've got a book on the history of Cuba that I got from the library that I'm reading right now, and it is fascinating. When I'm in an environment where I can listen to something, it's going to be music. I'm a big fan of music, as you know.
That's true.
So
That's
yeah,
true.
no, I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, so it's kind of a weird situation for me, but I'm gonna do the best I can, I'll try anything once.
Hey, and this at least this means guaranteed you're not going to be copying anybody else's style.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm a podcast original.
Welcome to You, Me, and IBMI.
Well, Alex, I got a real treat for you. I've been watching this guy for months. Not because I think he has any technical talent, because I really didn't know what he does before I started talking to him. But this guy has the best posture I've ever seen. And I assume he was in the military or something, because my posture, as you know, is horrible. I should be 6'3", but I'm really more like 5'11", because I slump all the time. That is not the case for our guest today. And his name is Jeff Cummings. Jeff, are you around here somewhere?
Yeah. You know, actually, the first time I met you, that's the first thing you said to me in the hallway. You said, "You have immaculate posture." I was like, well, thank you. Thank you, guy I've never talked to before. I appreciate it. And then we started chatting.
That wasn't weird. That wasn't weird at all.
No, you know, as you said, the whole military thing, coming from that background, people from all walks of life. So you hear some weird comments or you know, anything from people, anything can come up. So
one of the funniest things I think is funny is, do you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm?
I have. Yep.
Okay. So do you know the particular scene I'm going to talk about, or Alex, do you?
You know, I've seen the show. I've seen like a lot of those episodes, but I have no idea. Larry David is a great conversationalist, though. I know that.
Oh, he's great. So anyway, in this one, and just going back to the military thing and you kind of hearing a lot of funny things, there's an episode of the show where there is a guy that just got back from Iraq. And he's being introduced to everybody else that's, you know, in the house. And everybody says, exactly, thank you for your service. And it comes to Larry and he goes, hey, nice to meet you. And, yep. And then, you know,
I believe Jeff that's Garland's Chet Hanks is the actor. Tom Hanks' son is the one that plays the guy. Yeah. And it's actually quite funny because me and my buddies talk about that all the time, is the thank you for your service thing. And, you know, especially being back in the United States, I came back from Italy in like probably 2014.
Sure.
And I was a recruiter here, so I was in uniform in this town. I never knew this town, Rochester, even existed. Yeah. But coming to this town, so I'd go to the grocery store, go to Hy-Vee, wherever, and I'm zone canvassing. I'm using air quotes. Mm-hmm. But I'd be out there in uniform, and I couldn't go anywhere without, you know, 10 people. Hey, thank you for your service. Thank you. Thank you. And it's always awkward for us because I'm like, what do I say? I'm not going to go, you're welcome, or high five them. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. So, sure. So in that, I saw that scene pop up on Instagram, and I commented on it. And I said, I'm a 10-year active duty veteran, and I agree with Larry David. like you guys already all thanked him. I don't need to thank him, you know. It is quite awkward sometimes until you get, you know, you get used to it after a while. But I don't know what the proper response to that was, you know.
Well, you know, people do appreciate the sacrifice of other people, you know? That is funny. So maybe when I said, hey, you have great posture, you're like, oh, thank God this guy didn't thank me for my service. the reason that we are having you on today, Jeff, is because I was talking to a friend of mine who happens to be your manager. And I asked him if there would be anything in the hardware area that he thought might make a good episode for a show. I suggested to him, Steve, that it might be good for customers to know more about kind of how hardware support works, or kind of how they can better manage systems so that reporting hardware issues is easier, so that they're, you know, who knows? There are a myriad of things you could pick with hardware. But he suggested that I get a hold of you because you were someone that was great to talk to about Call Home.
Yeah. So just a little bit of a lead in or a backstory for that. I started with this company a little over 3 years ago as a remote technical support for hardware, power okay. hardware, and kind of jumped into learning that stuff, taking customer calls, things like that. And I saw these cases that would always pop up, and they would say call home, and then they would have the problem. Versus sure. when a customer opens a case, I'd see, you know, whatever problem they would type in, either great information or none at all, depending. But I would always see these call home things, and I started to ask questions about it. And what I'd found out was there was one individual that kind of started this whole thing many years back, 15 plus yeah. years ago. It's a series of code that basically catches information from the system. So the system says, hey, I have something going on with me. Sends sure. it out there into the ether. And this code picks up on triggers and routes it to the correct team, you know, fills in the correct information to help with problem resolution so we can get there faster. I was very interested in it. I've always liked automation. been a World of Warcraft player for 20 years, and I make little macros and automate my my game as much as I can. Some people call it cheating, but if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
Now, Alex, you've been playing World of Warcraft for a long time. As a matter of fact, you've asked me to play a few times, and I just cannot get good at that game. So you guys can probably talk a lot about that.
You may be thinking of StarCraft. I never got into Warcraft. I play Supreme Commander. I don't know if Jeff, if you've ever heard of that.
I have. Yeah, I'm a RTS player as well. Actually, they have a Black Friday sale, so I just re-downloaded StarCraft. So.
Oh, okay.
I haven't played it in a long time.
A lot of StarCraft, but these days, my 11-year-old son and I will play Supreme Commander.
Nice.
I think he loves the giant robots.
What is Supreme Commander? For someone who doesn't know what it is, what is Supreme Commander?
It's just a real-time strategy game, really massive scale. So you're using your mouse wheel a lot to zoom in and out of the action.
Oh, okay.
And big giant war simulation, I suppose. Hmm. Great fun.
I'm stuck in the 1990s because I'm still playing Lynx 386 Pro all the time. It also means I don't have to spend a lot of money on a gaming computer.
I play some NBA Jam here and there. So,
NBA Jam is great. So, Jeff, one of the first things I think of when I think about Call Home is that most customers probably want to take advantage of it. Is this something that's automatically working for everybody, or kind of how does that need to be set up?
Yeah, it's a good question. It isn't automatically working on these systems. There are steps that the customer needs to take to get it set up. And there are public links for that, which I will provide to you guys for the podcast purposes.
Yeah, and we'll put the links right into the description for the show.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, and then they should be informed when they do purchase their system on steps they can take to do that. One thing I will note though is very important to have correct contact information. Some customers may have somebody that holds the account. They may leave the company, go to a different job, whatever it is, and they don't delete those names, and somebody else takes over, and then the contact data is mismatched, whatever it might be. That's one of the main areas that I try to focus on or educate people on is making sure that contact information is up to date. It's key for Call Home to actually work and for it to go, a problem report to make it through the entire process to case creation, whether it be entitlements or just their registration info. That'll have to be up to date.
Have you ever seen a situation where one of these Call Home cases was created and it revealed a problem that could be fixed or whatever, and if it hadn't successfully opened that case automatically, the system would have crashed and the company would have lost millions of dollars? Have you ever seen that?
I would say most Call Homes, even if they're small issues, they can turn into bigger ones. I kind of look at them as the canary in the coal mine. So it's gonna if it deems that, the system deems that, hey, this is a problem report, we need to send this up, it's gonna go through the full process. And what I mean by the full process is we have a bunch of different engines that it has to go through. It has to, meet certain criteria. We pull data, our triggers go off, it gets routed to certain areas, and the case gets opened. And it could be something as small as a cache battery, for example. We have a Call Home setup that will shoot over a case and say, and it'll open the case. I call these case feed and close. It'll open the case on our side so we can have a record of it. It'll automatically send the customer information that says, hey, your cache batteries are going to die within 90 days. It will then close that case automatically on our end because it's given them an informational piece of advice that they need.
Sure.
And it'll inform them of what they need to do.
So, Jeff, I assume then that when we are processing these Call Homes, we need to have the correct contact information to be able to, email back to the customer?
It all depends on what the actual problem report is. So let's take, for example, a cache battery. If the customer's cache battery is, we have two types of rules for that one. And I've actually broken it into five or six rules just so I can be completely specific with what it is. But let's say a customer's cache battery, it's a preemptive event, and the system deems that this is a problem report. It'll send it up through its whole process, and we'll catch it on our end as a case open. And it'll say, hey, this case or this cache battery is going to fail within the next 90 days. That lands right into either the supports bucket, depending on what kind of cache battery it is, okay. Or it'll land right into our dispatches bucket, where we'll send a part out, you know, for the customer because, oh, hey, these things are going to fail, and we'll get a technician scheduled.
Okay.
All right off the bat. Now, if the customer has their contact information and their scheduling preferences all up to date, that can just happen without any of their intervention. If they don't have any sort of scheduling preferences loaded,
yeah,
then somebody will reach out to them and say, hey, what's the best time that works for you? This is what's going on. But in that particular case, if it's an auto dispatch, the customer will also get an email. And if they're a community user as well, they'll get a post into the case, a public post into the case, informing them what's going on even before any of that stuff happens. So it's,
what is a community user?
So it's a little checkbox that we have on CSP here that states that their contact information is up to date and okay, they're willing to get. So if they're a community user, whenever a public post is made in our CSP, they're going to get notification for it, whether it's whatever dashboard they're using or an email.
Oh, okay. Okay, great.
Man, that really sounds like it has a very high potential to save some administrators bacon.
Our big thing is problem resolution. The faster we can solve problems, the less problems arise.
So, Jeff, you know, when Alex and I started, we were talking about kind of how our day was. So what does a typical day look like for you?
Basically, I sign in. I read an inbox full of complaints about automation. Automation is still pretty new to a lot of people, I think. And it's very, very easy to point a finger at an inanimate object versus a human. But there is a human behind the inanimate object that makes it work. And it's usually me.
Yeah.
Well, it is me, at least for PowerSide. We have two other leads for the other products, the storage and Z as well. But yeah, everything power goes through me. It's usually a lot of misconceptions on how automation works. I would say out of the 10 complaints I get each morning, 9 of them are human caused. And it's very quick and easy for me to investigate that. But I don't want to put a damper on any of those because every now and then I get a golden nugget of information where somebody does find an issue. And since there's only one of me and there's, you know, many, many, many rules out there for automation, sure, I kind of need to leverage the boots on the ground for them to say, hey, you know, this link is broken, or, you know, this problem didn't call home correctly. It tagged this location of this item or whatever it might be. Those are key, you know, points for me to work with, and I can go and repair or write new rules. If something's not working properly, you know, it might be an issue or a solution where I can split a rule into two, write something brand new for it, just to properly, you know, route it where it's supposed to go.
So like, what's an example of a rule, right? So the system calls in, and what kind of information is an IBMI system, for example, or it could say a power system because you work with it, with all of them. Like, what kind of information is it giving you? From Alex and our perspective, we're used to customers having an issue that might pop up. Like, for example, right, the cache battery thing, that's like probably like a CPPEA 1.3 or something like that. And then the customers can run like work problem and they see like, this is the problem. They can dump out the APAR, send it into support. But if it's automatically sending you stuff, what kind of information is the system able to send you that you are then parsing out?
So it's problem report information, and it is 50,000 plus lines of information that goes through our first line of rules, which is the pre-processing rules. So that's going to look at different things like symptom, through information, location, things like that. And if, for example, it had already sent a case up, or it already sent a problem up and it resulted in case creation.
You mean from the same system or from a different system?
Yeah, scenario. It sends one up. It makes it through. It opens a case for an issue. And we'll just stick back to the cache battery issue because it's fresh in mind.
Yep.
And then it wants to call home again because it noticed this. The system sends it in again, depending on, you know, maybe they did a IPL of the system, or they did something and it goes, hey, I got a problem again. I'm going to send it up.
Sure.
our pre-processing will say, hey, you know what? I already have a cache information of this case being opened based on certain set of criteria. So then we're going to close that out, and we're going to inform the case, or put a post in the case that basically said, hey, a duplicate event was just processed. Here's the information for it.
Okay.
We do that to, you know, lighten the load on our remote technical support. If we didn't, no cases would get worked, because there'd just be hundreds and hundreds of duplicate cases in there at all times.
Yeah.
So we try to clean those up preemptively. And then with a second set of rules in the post-processing side, that's where my triggers are. So I have triggers that will query things like, and I have two sets of rules in this area. I have continue rules, which run at all times. And then I have terminate rules, and it's sequentially based rules. So it'll go down my list of rules, and once it hits a trigger that matches, you know, the criteria of the problem report, it will terminate, it will stop right there, and it'll say, okay, I meet this criteria. But if it has a continue rule, so let's say it's a certain country wants, you know, only to work in their language, for example, I have a continue rule for specific countries that will say, hey, you know, here's how you can do some translations. So that'll go in every single case that comes from that region, but then it'll actually meet a terminate rule of, hey, boom, here you go. You have a firmware issue, or you have a cache battery issue, or a disk drive needs to get changed, whatever it might be. And that's kind of how the rules work for automation, for power automation, at least.
Well, now, how do you know? That's really, I didn't know any of that was happening. That's really interesting. So here's an example. Here's where I kind of get confused on it. How do you know when a system is reporting a certain problem to you, that it's one certain problem and not maybe two or three problems that could be causing the same issue?
That happens a lot. So we'll, if it is one specific problem, and again, it meets the, we have duplication and we have near duplication. So if it's close, if it's related, we're going to close it as a near dupe. But if it's the same, let's say it's a disk drive issue. Another disk drive issue comes in, it's very similar, but it has a different location. Well, that's getting open as a separate case because it's a separate disk drive.
Okay. Okay. Different location disk drive. So,
yep. So there's certain areas.
Same system, but now a different disk drive. Those are going to be processed separately.
Yes. And then severity also comes into play too. So, you know, depending on what's going on with the system, if it's in an error state, you know, it doesn't matter. That thing is getting pushed through. Hey, we have a severity one issue, and it's going to hit my severity one rule or a corresponding rule, but it'll still come in as a severity one, and then that's going to the top of the pile. So
okay, so that goes to a real person sitting in support going, we need to process and make sure that the customer is getting helped as soon as possible.
Yeah, and a lot of these rules do still go to real people, even if they're not severity ones.
Okay.
You know, as far as the pre-processing stuff goes, that's about deflection and closing things that are noise or duplicates. Well, then on the post-processing side, when things come in, I have a whole host of rules that are informational closes. So I call them case feed and close. So it'll come in, we'll see it. It'll open a case for our record. It'll send the customer an email of, hey, you need to update some firmware. Here's what you're at. Here's what you need to be at, whatever it is. A human doesn't need to do that, so it closes the case. Sure. But I do provide links for, you know, information on how to do it, as well as links for, I don't know what I'm doing. I need to open this case. I need to open a case and have someone help me. That's there as well.
Yeah.
So, but then I have the auto dispatch things where I have, you know, quick problem resolution. We can send a part out, send a technician out, get it squared away. But for things that are a little bit more sensitive and complicated, I route those to support. We call it digital self-help. I try to track down as much information prior to it opening, to the case opening for the support as I can. So, and that's where the triggers come into play. So especially if it's something new for one of our new systems and people aren't super familiar with it, I'll talk to the box leads, the STSMs, product engineers, and I'll try to get the most current and accurate Drupal documents and different things that a support person will need to get to a problem resolution on this issue.
Must gather type information.
Yes. Like
with, other tools we have. Yeah.
And not to say it's 100%, but you know, it's, hey, we're going to give you at least 80% of the information. Some of them are 100%. Hey, this is the same thing we've seen 1,000 times. Here's what you have to do. Follow this, these steps for problem resolution. And the reason we have it like that is it might not be a part replacement. We'll say, hey, check these things first. If these don't work, then go ahead and replace the part. Well, I don't want to auto dispatch that if it's as simple as a firmware update. And so that's why we have that set of rules as well.
Well, you know, that's really nice. And Alex, I'm sure you would agree. This reminds me of a very common issue in the software side of the house, where customers will sometimes open a case and in their, you know, I'll call it zeal, you know, to get that case open and get someone working on it as soon as possible, there's really not enough information provided in the case to really be actionable. And so a lot of cases start with us going back to the customer and saying, you know, can you please let us know, you know, what is your latest PTF level? And, you know, what are, you know, did this just start happening, and kind of start from scratch almost, where we really need to start gathering information to even understand what the problem is. Alex, I'm sure you see that maybe a lot too.
Oh yeah, all the time. In fact, lately I've been sending out the document to help customers gather a SysSnap. I don't know if you've heard of that, Jeff, but it just gathers a whole lot of information, and like log entries, history log, job logs, things like that. But I wanted to ask you, have you ever worked with Ansible? Because, you know, whenever I hear the word automation, I think of Ansible, and it just seems like a combination of Callhome and Ansible would be like a Wonder Twin Powers sort of thing, right?
I have been looking for opportunities to kind of build a bridge between hardware and software and see if there are things that I can automate on my end. You know, maybe it is a hardware issue that leads to a software issue. And in doing that, and speaking with a couple people in your neck of the woods, come to find out I already am for a lot of issues. It was specific hardware issues. I don't want to get into the weeds with them, but we already have automation for that does an informational post to the customer. It doesn't require man hours, you know, for problem resolution. It's just, hey, here's where you're at. This is what you need to be at. It'll solve your issue.
Yeah.
And we do that quite a bit. I was trying to find out if there was an automation person for software. It doesn't look like there is. So I'm trying to be that person as well. trying to kind of go into both worlds. You know, so.
That's funny you mentioned that because I think back around probably 2008, 2009, there was an issue where we would get software cases opened, and because they were like a typical issue, like, you know, if you're not at the certain, you know, up at the latest, for example, host print transform PTFs for printing, you can have little tiny blips that happen once in a while and result in a problem being created, which then was resulting in the cases being created to us, which we would always have to go back and say, you just have to make sure that you have on the latest PTS for this area. And that typically takes care of 99% of these, and you won't see them anymore. And there was someone in the center who caught that just because they happened to see that there were a lot of cases that came in that only took a minute to solve. And in looking through things and searching through things, they found this thing. We were calling them 0.1 touches because they were always only using 0.1 of an hour. A long time ago, we would always track everything in 6-minute increments. So we were calling them 0.1 touches. And this lady was just a genius. She figured out what they were. And somehow with the software as part of how the cases coming in, automatically took care of those. And they went away. And yeah, if someone doesn't need to call in or something doesn't need to happen, we would rather the customers be able to help themselves or not even see it, especially if it's something that they can't really help themselves and it's just kind of wasting their time.
I have 2 points on that too. Is, you know, it might seem like it's quick and easy for support to just go, hey, this is all you need to do. That does add up over time, but also just to think of the customer, you know, they have an issue and how long does it take for support to get to those? You know, there might be higher severity issues that you're working on. So they're kind of just left holding the bag waiting for an answer, whereas we can just do it instantly, you know. But the other point, though, is identifying
that's real true.
Identifying that issue and looking for patterns. That's the other part of my job. I know we had started to talk about what's a day in the life, and then we went off on some tangents here, but that's the other part of it too, is just pattern recognition, looking for areas where automation can be implemented. And so that type of scenario right there is, that happens a couple times a month where we go, okay, look, this is a time waster, or, you know, customers aren't happy with the milestones or problem resolution time on this. How can we enhance this or make this better? And that's part of it too.
That's really meaningful work. And, you know, the idea, like you said, about, you know, when a customer opens a case and they're waiting for us to give them some suggestion or something we've seen, you know, there's certain things in the system, you know, I've probably seen 5,000. I've probably taken 5,000 calls on setting up a printer. You know, some customers only set up a printer once a year, and then they don't need to touch it again because it just works perfectly, you know? And so that's why we started making a lot of videos, because, you know, a customer might have an issue at a time when it's not convenient for them to be on the phone, you know? And so one of our most popular videos actually is one of Alex's, and it's about how to make sure that SQL is, and ODBC are working great in the system. And yeah, I think always kind of having our back in our minds, the idea that there's a lot of value in customer self-support and making sure that we're supporting the customers that way with what you do with automation and other ways we document and better make it so customers can solve their own problems.
And that's part of the links I was talking about. If I'm sending something informational, things like that would be great. You know, if it's a link that they can access, I can put that in the email and say, hey, here's a video that, you know, matches your specific system. And here, you know, if you need help figuring it out, a lot of these customers are smart though. They, as long as that we just say, hey, here's what's going on, they go, I know how to do that. No problem. But it doesn't hurt to have additional links, especially if it's something, you know, oh, maybe I need a little refresher on this. So that's the type of stuff that I'm also looking for from our product engineers and, you know, different people around the company that have been working with these systems for as long as they have, is guides like that. Guides, whether it's written, video, audio, anything. So
yeah. Well, Jeff, I'm gonna be keeping you in mind when I'm thinking about hardware and software problems. I'll say that. What, Alex?
Well, I was just gonna say, you know, you sound like a really busy guy. I don't. I feel guilty taking up too much of your time. I wonder, you used to be in the military. Are you still involved in the military in any capacity these days?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. I did 10 years active duty in the Air Force. And like most adults, I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up, even into my 30s. So I decided to get out, try my hand at some other things like real estate and setting up networks over at the Mayo Clinic, and landed here at IBM. And when I first started with IBM, I saw that there was a veteran network. It's the Rochester Veterans BRG, Business Resource Group. Went and attended one of the meetings. They were giving out cookies and coffee, I think, at the time. And the head of the BRG, we ended up chatting, and come to find out, I put his best friend in the military when I was a recruiter here in Rochester.
Wow, nice.
And somebody else was overhearing things, and they were like, wait a minute, oh, I know you. You put my nephew in. And I was like, yeah. So then it just kind of turned into a whole conversation. Fast forward a month.
Thank you for your service.
I appreciate it. Fast forward a month or so, and I ended up taking over as the leader of the BRG. So we do a lot of the community outreach things. We've done Teed Up for the Troops, big golf benefit here in town, volunteer at Channel One's food shelf, highway cleanup, you name it. The veterans, we're usually there doing something. So,
I was going to say, you know, most customers don't know, you know, I think a lot of customers don't really know what IBMers are really doing while they're kind of away from the phone. And that's one of the things that I found out when I joined IBM too, is that, you know, employees here can choose to be active in a lot of different professional associations, or like you said, we call them business resource groups or resource groups. Yeah, we have ones for volunteering. There's one for like health and wellness. We have like running teams and things like that. We even have one where we have a Lego one where people do work with regional schools. And I think this year they had like 350 kids in almost 20 different schools just learning how to do technical stuff with Legos. But you are in the military one, or you're the head of it now.
Yep. Have been for the past 6 months or so, which also keeps me busy. To Alex's point, you know, this job for the automation job is a 24/7 job. So if systems are going haywire and things are happening in the middle of the night, to me, that answers to it on the weekend, the holidays.
Hard,
so yeah, I try. I find time during the day to do the BRG stuff or personal things if I need to. But my team is global, the team that I work with. So sometimes I have to sign on late at night because they're in Australia and I'm in Central Time Zone.
Sure.
So, you know, it's fun. My schedule is kind of all over the place because of that. So I take liberties when I need to. So,
and I saw in your picture thumbnail that you've got a kid. So to add to all those other time.
Yes. Yeah. She just turned two on November 7th. So she's actually I'm at the home office right now and I had to lock my door because she can open doors now. That's new.
Boy. Yeah.
And so I locked it. She's out there with her mom and she was sliding things underneath the crack of the door. So now and then Kurt would be talking and I would have to turn back around because I hear something sliding behind me and it's her little puzzle pieces. So
awesome.
2 years old is one of my favorite ages, I think, because
they're
so cute and they can do so much. And I never understood what Terrible 2 was all about myself.
I love 2, but we just started 2, so there's still time. But yeah, it's just
again in the year.
True. It's just fun watching her learn things, and she surprises me with words that I didn't know she knew. She had a stethoscope toy for this little. We brought her veterinarian set. She's got the dog and the cone of shame and all the different things, but she had the stethoscope and she goes scepascope, and I was like, how do you know what that's called? And so that's probably awesome. one of her shows she watches or something. So
well, pretty soon she'll be automating her stethoscope too, just like you're automating everything else over here.
Mm-hmm. It's very true. Got to pass it down.
Well, Jeff, I just want to thank you for being on our show today, being the first guest on our very first episode. Yeah, I just wanted, I really learned a lot. I thought I knew what call home was because I've sent links to customers a couple times about how to make sure they can connect, but I didn't really know everything that was part of it.
Yeah, that was super informative and fun way to meet you, Jeff. I'm sure I've seen you in the hallways, but I had no idea who you were.
Look for the guy with really good posture.
Yeah, look, I'll keep my eye out for somebody with really good posture.
No, I appreciate you guys having me on. Sorry I had to reschedule on you from yesterday. I, you know, when you pull your back and sitting in a chair is just excruciating. So I probably wasn't the happiest. I wouldn't have been the happiest guest yesterday. But then even sleeping last night, I had to sleep at weird angles. So now my neck is hurt, and every time I turn to look at the puzzle piece that my daughter's sliding under the door, I look like Michael Keaton's Batman, and turn my whole body. You know, I'm like, what is that? So, you know, we made it happen. It's good. I really appreciate you guys having me on and allowing me to be your first guest.
All right, man. See you guys later, and thanks again.
Yep.
Talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.